The Index Astartes, a history of the Space Marine Legions and subsequent chapters, where appropriate, up to the 13th Black Crusade. The Alpha Legion. The Alpha Legion use secrecy, spy networks and traitors to assail its enemies from as many different directions as possible in carefully orchestrated attacks. Hidden within the heart of the Imperium, the Alpha Legion coordinates cultist activities and launches full-scale terror attacks. Following the Horus Heresy, thousands of records, archives, and libraries were destroyed to purge any mention, indeed any memory, of the traitors. 10 millennia later, there are now billions of Imperial citizens who remain unaware that the rebellion ever happened. However, a few tomes survived, mostly in the hands of those in high authority, or heretics, whose true loyalties remain undiscovered. It is from these works that historians and inquisitors have gleaned their knowledge of these ancient times. Of course, sifting out the truth is never easy, because most books are copies of copies, or simply forgeries filled with lies. In the case of the Alpha Legion, reliable facts are even harder to come by, as the Legion was notoriously secretive. For example, unlike the homeworlds of most of the first founding legions of the Adeptus Astartes, the Alpha Legion's home planet is unknown or non-existent. The reason for this omission is unclear, but Inquisitor Craven of the Ordo Malleus has recently unearthed an ancient journal that he claims provides an accurate account of the first contact with and recovery of the Legion's Primarch. Craven has estimated the veracity of this journal at 62.6%, but has thus far refused to produce it for independent examination. According to Craven's claim, towards the end of the Great Crusade, an advanced patrol cruiser of the Lunar Wolves Legion, assigned to search for lost human worlds, entered an unnamed system. Swarming towards the vessel came a horde of small spaceships of varying types, mainly one- and two-man fighters. Despite the fact that the ships were of primitive design and apparently more than one origin, the attack was highly coordinated. Dozens of ships mobbed the Lunar Wolves' Thunderhawks, while others braved the batteries of turret defense guns to shoot at the huge cruiser. However, the weapons of the fighters made little impression, and the attack soon broke off. The Lunar Wolves' cruiser gave chase, eager to show the puny attackers the power of the Adeptus Astartes. It was only after the first impact that the bridge crew realized that they had been lured into a minefield. Maneuvering to escape resulted in two more explosions and serious damage to the engines that forced the cruiser to halt in place until repairs could be made. The horde of fighters renewed the attack and forced the badly outnumbered Thunderhawks into a desperate defense of the damaged cruiser. 2 days later, the rest of the Lunar Wolves' fleet arrived, summoned by the cruiser's distress signal. The Legion's Primarch, Horus, furious at the crew's failure to deal with such insignificant attackers, was shuttled straight to the stricken cruiser. He found the command deck in a state of high alert. The enemy had somehow managed to board the cruiser and had split up to evade capture in the ship's endless corridors and service ducts. The enemy troops, who had not already been found and eliminated, now seemed to be converging on the bridge. Horus waited for them. As 5 men burst onto the deck, he shot 4 of them through the head before they had a chance to act. Without pause, a 5th shot rang out, but the last man was different. Ever a foot taller than even the Lunar Wolves, he had piercing green eyes and looked almost a match for Horus himself. Somehow, even at such close range, the man sidestepped quickly enough that the bolt shell only grazed his temple and exploded against the bulkhead behind. As the man charged forwards, a 2nd shot slammed into his shoulder, but still he did not slow. More shots were fired by guards and bridge officers, as well as Horus. The man staggered under multiple impacts, but incredibly pressed on through the firestorm to launch himself at the Primarch. At the last instant, with his hands inches from Horus's throat, the man stopped. The 2 stared at each other for a long moment, before Horus started laughing. He had found the last Primarch. The new arrival called himself Altharius, and claimed to have been travelling this area of space for many years. However, he remained tight-lipped as to where he had come from. Various worlds in that locale were subsequently brought into the Imperial fold, but Alpharius always denied that any of them were his home. The conglomeration of planets he had been leading was persuaded to join the Imperium with little bloodshed. The wounds Alpharius had suffered quickly healed. However, Horus did not send him straight back to Terra to meet the Emperor. Instead, he kept the Primarch with him for some months. Horus was most impressed with Alpharius' remarkable success against the Lunar Wolves cruiser, trapping it, boarding, and then penetrating right to the bridge. During this time, Horus allowed his newfound brother to take tactical command in various actions that occurred. Alpharius was clearly just as impressed with Horus, with the huge martial power he wielded, and with his instincts of when and when not to use it. Eventually, Alpharius was taken back to the epicenter of the ever-expanding Imperium and reunited with the Emperor. There was the usual rejoicing, pomp, and circumstance, but records on Terra suggest that the two spent little time together. Alpharius was quickly sent to take command of his legion, while the Emperor had many pressing affairs of state. The Alpha Legion, as it was then named, was the last of the Adeptus Astartes legions to be created. With astonishing prescience, the Emperor had ordered their founding just a few decades before. The new Space Marines were tall and strong, were reminiscent of their Primarch and possessed a cunning intelligence. Alpharius led his army, created in his image, to the outer reaches of the Imperium and was eager to join battle and emulate the glories of the older legions. His first campaigns were well planned and highly successful, and he worked to develop and mold his legion's tactics. He argued that the best attack comes from many directions at once, and advocated assaulting the foe on all sides in every way. He insisted on keeping options open, and never relied on any one thing, person, or single victory to win the day. He was always prepared with a backup plan, like a flanking force in perfect position. Alpha Legion infiltrators invariably struck behind enemy lines at just the right moment. Alpharius added to this doctrine by seeking as many other advantages as he could. He would bargain for allies, encourage treachery within the ranks of the enemy army, and develop a network of informers and spies within the populace. Underground rebel groups and activists would be contacted and persuaded to provide diversionary attacks, demonstrations, or bombings at agreed times. By the time a battle started, the Alpha Legion would have so many elements to its advantage that it was virtually impossible for them to lose. The Legion soon gained a reputation for devastatingly coordinated campaigns. While these methods took longer to execute than a simple frontal assault, they were far less costly in troops, which enabled Alpharius to spread his forces widely. Most of the other legions had taken planets, usually the worlds where their primarchs had been found to be their headquarters and bases of operations. The other legions constructed glorious cathedral-like fortresses, and many had taken over governing their worlds, and even the surrounding systems. But Alpharius did not believe in this high-profile approach. He is thought to have established several bases, but kept their locations hidden from everyone outside the Legion. Only the whereabouts of smaller staging posts and supply depots were made known, and even this information was highly restricted. It is thought that Alpharius worked tirelessly to develop his officers and encourage them to think for themselves. He instigated programs of training and constantly set challenges for his troops to overcome, even in the midst of battle, to force them to adapt and improvise. There are even documented occasions when, shortly before or during major offensives, the Primarch simply disappeared in order to assess how his legion would perform without him. Alpharius did not seek glory or honours for himself and rarely attended victory celebrations. Consequently, he never spent much time with the other Primarchs, and it was many years before he met all of them. His first encounter with Rebute Gilliman of the Ultramarines was reputedly strained. Gilliman believed in rigid structure and hierarchy, and had a firm battle doctrine with which his legion never wavered. He was in the process of documenting the correct tactics and operations of a Space Marine force, tried and tested during his long years of command, and suggested that the young Alpha Legion should adopt this codex behaviour. However, this attitude was anathema to Alpharius's belief in initiative and adaptability, and a heated debate over tactics and ideology ensued. When it became clear that Alpharius would not bow to Gilliman's experience and superiority, The elder Primarch pointed out the thousands of victories and battle honours his legion had won, and told his youngest brother that he could never hope to compare. After that meeting, Alpharius pushed his legion even harder and sought out the most difficult challenges for his forces. He knew he could not equal the number of worlds conquered by the older legions, for they had been founded centuries earlier. But he seemed determined to win their respect for his legion's martial prowess. On the world of Testra Prime, the population was violently resistant to the idea of imperial rule. Alpharius deliberately delayed his assault a full week to allow the planet's armies to amass and dig in around the sprawling capital city. When battle commenced, there were close to 1 million soldiers arrayed against the Alpha Legion. However, the week had not been spent idly. The Space Marines had deployed such that they could attack from various directions and leave huge sections of the defensive line untouched. Just as the assault was launched, bombs detonated within the city, demolished dozens of bridges and blocked major supply routes. The defending Testran commanders found themselves unable to move troops and supplies into the areas under attack or out of the areas that were being ignored. The divided forces tried to hold out against the relentless advance of the Alpha Legion, but the lack of ammunition and reinforcements made it a hopeless task. And of course, while help could not be brought in, retreating soldiers found they could not get out fast enough either. Thousands ended up herded together down the few remaining escape routes and were cut to pieces in an endless rain of bolter shells. It was 2 days before enough of the defenders could be redeployed to mount a serious counterattack. However, officers in the Testran army had somehow been compromised, and these traitors betrayed details of the plan. The counterattack advanced into a trap and found itself beset by armored space marines on all sides. Within a week, the Testran forces had suffered 90% casualties. When asked why he had not simply seized the capital before the defending armies arrived, Alpharius replied, "It would have been too easy." Heresy. His conduct in the Battle of Testra invited censure from many quarters. Ribute Gilliman is recorded as having called it a huge waste of time and effort in the Emperor's bolt shells. However, concerns about alleged atrocities committed by the Night Lord's Legion diverted attention away from the incident. Nevertheless, Alpharius was furious at the reaction to his legion's masterful performance. Only Horus openly praised the manner in which the Alpha Legion had overcome an opposition that outnumbered them 100-1. Horus was the only other Primarch with whom Alpharius had any regular contact. The two appeared to respect each other greatly and are thought to have discussed tactics often. At the start of the heresy, the War Master's forces amassed on Istvan V. The Emperor sent no fewer than 7 legions, fully 1/3 of the entire Adeptus Astartes, to put down the rebellion. The initial wave consisted of 3 of those legions, the Salamanders, the Iron Hands, and the Raven Guard. They were seriously mauled as they made planetfall and battled to secure safe landing zones. The second wave was made up of the remaining 4 legions, and some sources name the Alpha Legion among them. After their initial landings, these loyalists attacked their allies instead of the rebels. Utterly betrayed and attacked on all sides, the 3 allegedly loyalist legions had no chance at all. Just 5 loyal space marines survived, bearing the precious gene seed of many of their fallen brethren. Given the average size of the legions at the time, the death toll must have reached 30,000, while rebel casualties on Istvan are estimated in just a few thousand. Inquisitor Craven has observed that such a deceitful trap was strongly reminiscent of Alpharius's tactics and suggests that he and Horus may have devised this brilliant plan together. Other scholars have made the same connection, though with rather less enthusiastic wording. Exactly when Alpharius chose to side with the War Master is not clear. Certainly he spent more time with Horus than he ever did with the Emperor. Perhaps there was an understanding between them right from the beginning. However, it is not thought that Alpharius was blindly following Horus, for he seemed to have his own agenda. He relished every battle against loyalist space marines as the ultimate test of military skill. Again and again, the Alpha Legion proved it was the match of the other legions. Alpharius's forces started going out of their way to find space marine opponents and inflicted stinging defeats on the loyalist White Scars at Talarn, a Space Wolves company at Urant, and other legions at dozens of smaller outposts. Well before the War Master's forces reached Terra, The Alpha Legion had become separated, but continued to wage war on all that they came across. Even after the defeat of Horus on Terra, the Alpha Legion continued on unchecked, apparently inventing objectives and missions with absolutely no connection to the rebellion as a whole. They moved into the galactic east, towards, whether by coincidence or design, the Ultramarines Legion. The Ultramarines had been posted on the eastern fringe when their heresy began, and were racing back to the Segmentum Solar. They were enraged at the treachery of their brother Space Marines, and the War Master's connivance to keep them too far away to affect the outcome. It is possible that Alpharius deliberately sought out the Ultramarines, and that he wished to confront Rebute Gilliman in battle, and prove the superiority of his tactics. Other theories suggest that the Ultramarines tracked down the Alpha Legion, and seized the opportunity to be avenged on one of the traitor legions. However it came about, the two Space Marine Legions met in battle on the world of Escrador. First to arrive on the planet, Alpharius was able to choose his battleground, for he knew the Ultramarines would not rest until they had hunted the traitors down. The Alpha Legion deployed deep within a harsh mountain range at the pole of the planet. The mountains were riven with gullies, ravines, and high passes that would seriously hamper movement, especially for ground vehicles. Alpharius was convinced that the battle would be won by the side that overcame these problems the best through forward planning, coordinated air transport, and detachments coping independently of heavy support. Gilliman was a military commander with few peers. However, all the experience, lessons, and tactics he had accumulated over the centuries had been carefully documented, compiled, and made accessible to the other legions, as the Primarch wanted to improve the Emperor's armies as a whole. These records gave Alpharius the advantage, because he knew how the Ultramarines operated. Indeed, Gilliman's initial deployment followed exactly the doctrines set down in his own writings, and the Alpha Legion moved to trap them. But Gilliman chose the first nightfall to do something unexpected. Breaking his own rules of operation, he led a large portion of his forces with no lines of support or supply deep into the mountains and deployed by Thunderhawk, Drop Pod and Teleporter in the midst of the Alpha Legion. Gilliman's target was the enemy command center, and none other than Alpharius himself. The following account appears to be the personal log of a member of the Ultramarine Strike Force, probably a sergeant. It is included in Inquisitor Craven's diatribe, Lessons of Strife. Though other Inquisitors and representatives of the Ultramarines themselves have questioned its validity. The original document was purportedly discovered in a system earthward of Escrador.
Our strike force numbered over 3,000 Space Marines, and despite the lack of heavy armor in support due to our mode of arrival, we soon had the traitor's command center in disarray. There was no way the lightly armored buildings could stand up to our Devastator's firepower, and a direct assault by the much honored and revered Ultramarine Dreadnoughts. Our enemies were outnumbered 5-1, and soon started to fall back up the mountain valley, probably to buy time for a relieving force to arrive, my captain conjectured. However, knowing that the terrain would hamper the movement of reinforcements, we were zealous with the thought of revenge and pressed them hard. With perhaps 500 Space Marines remaining, the Alpha Legion force made a stand at the head of the valley. Their heavy weapons were deployed well, high on the mountainside, and felled many of our number as we fought upwards towards them. But their guns were too few, and our resolve unswerving. As we closed upon the traitors, Alpharius himself led a counterattack and charged headlong back down the rocky slope with his bodyguard and slammed into our line. Not even Ultramarines could stand before a Primarch, and his power sword felled every noble Space Marine within reach. Our advance halted, and I was forced to recite the Canticles of Faith to steady my squad. But then, an opposing figure appeared, and my heart was gladdened. Our great lord and Primarch, Rebute Gilliman, himself strode forward, ignoring the melee around him, straight towards Alpharius. The two Primarchs stood before each other. They were equal in stature. Both were clad in shining power armor, and each wielded a glittering power sword. Where one was noble, the other was craven. Where one was loyal, the other was a betrayer. All of the combat ceased as we watched them. There was a long pause, neither Primarch moving an inch. Then both struck in an instant. Each sword made a single stroke and then both were still again. For a second, the two great men stood facing, before Alpharius slumped to the ground. Like every other ultramarine on the field, I let out a loud cry of victory. Gilliman's plan had worked. The very heart of the enemy had been torn out. The remaining bodyguard fought on, but we fell on our adversaries with renewed vigour. When the last one had been cut down, we turned our attention to the rest of the Alpha Legion command. Trapped by the sheer mountains at the head of the valley, they had no escape from our bolter fire. We left no one alive. The body of the dead Primarch was burned on a great pyre. The Lord Gilliman allowed us a moment of prayer and reflection on our success before issuing orders to move out and commence the destruction of the leaderless enemy army. We are fully confident that the task will be straightforward. The loss of its Primarch is something from which no Legion can recover. The optimism engendered by our initial victory appears to have been misplaced. Since my last entry, we have ascertained that the Alpha Legion's command function has spread into numerous groups, and the loss of one apparently had minimal impact on their operational ability, even though it was Alpharius who fell. What is more, our deep strike and the target's subsequent retreat has drawn our forces well out of position, far from support. It has become clear that far from hunting our demoralized pockets of traitors, we are facing a superbly organized foe who is closing in on us from all sides. We have sighted our Thunderhawk gunships overhead, engaged in fierce battles with those of the Alpha Legion. Both legions have, of course, very similar numbers of Thunderhawks, so the aerial battle seems to be a standoff and leaves no chance of an air evacuation. Meanwhile, the enemy has launched several hit-and-run attacks on our strike force and caused numerous casualties. Lord Gilliman has commenced a retreat out of the mountains to link up with the rest of our ground troops. We are being harassed and ambushed every step of the way. Groups of Ascrador natives, apparently bribed or coerced into aiding the traitors, have triggered rock slides to block our path and delay us. Communications with the rest of our legion have been sporadic. Our tech marines think our communications are being jammed. However, some dialogue has been possible, and a relieving force comprising most of our remaining ground forces is pushing into the mountains towards us. However, they too have apparently been under attack, and supply vehicles have been sabotaged. After 5 grim days of intermittent fighting, we sighted the distinctive blue armour of our Ultramarines' brethren advancing down the valley towards us. However, having approached into range, our rescuers opened fire. A contingent of the Alpha Legion scum had disguised its heraldry and armour in order to spring a trap. Are there no depths to which these heretics will not sink? The utter dishonour that our erstwhile brothers have shown left me stunned. Most of the Alpha Legion appeared to our rear and initiated the biggest attack from our enemies so far. With mountains to either side, we had little option but to stand our ground and fight for our lives. Losses were heavy, and might have been total, were it not for the timely arrival of the real rescuing force. The reinforcements were in little better shape than our own beleaguered strike force, but the extra numbers allowed us to force a way through and establish a more defendable front line. The account goes on to describe how, in the next week, Gilliman attempted a number of counterattacks to regain the initiative, but the Alpha Legion seemed to have prior knowledge of their every move. Either the Alpha Legion was not where the Augurs suggested, or it had carefully planned ambushes waiting for the Loyalists. Finally, the Ultramarines evacuated the planet's surface and used their ships to bombard the traitors from orbit. Gilliman is recorded as having said he had no interest in righteous battle against such a dishonourable foe, and that the Ultramarines were needed back on Terra. However, it seems hard to dispute the fact that the Ultramarines were soundly beaten by the Alpha Legion, despite the loss of Alpharius. Certainly, the deep ravines of the mountain range would have provided plenty of cover from the bombardment. Exile. The months and years that followed were a chaotic time of regrouping, rebuilding, and retribution for the Imperium. When the Imperial forces returned to Ascrador, there was no sign of the Alpha Legion, although the entire native populace was purged to eradicate any taint of chaos. However, it is thought that the majority of the Legion did not flee into the Eye of Terror with the other rebels, and instead remained within the Imperium. Numerous secret bases were already in existence, and the Legion fragmented in order to hide itself in the midst of its enemies. Small forces kept up frequent attacks on military targets, especially those weakened by the carnage of the Heresy, and became a major problem for those trying to rebuild the shattered Imperium.
The location and destruction of these groups became a priority, and the legions devoted considerable resources to this end. The last pockets of Alpha Legion forces were declared eradicated in a proclamation by the High Lords of Terror in M32, but subsequent attacks proved this decree to be premature. Similar declarations were made in M33 and as recently as M39. The Dithio Plague. On the agri-world of Dithio Prime in 255 M41, there was a sudden plague of Crixian locusts, a species not usually found anywhere in the sector. They thrived in the warm climate of the planet, multiplied exponentially, decimated food crops, and caused widespread famine. There was a surge of anger and unrest among the populace, directed at the authorities who appeared to be powerless to deal with the infestation. In a single week, riots broke out in every large population center, and much of the local army mutinied. A regiment of Mordian Iron Guard was dispatched to quell the uprising, but they were ambushed and all but destroyed as they disembarked from their transports by a force of Chaos Space Marines hidden around the spaceport. The complete loss of food exports from the planet caused major supply problems in the subsector over the following years and resulted in further unrest on other worlds, which hindered Imperial forces during subsequent Chaos incursions into the Segmentum Pacificus. Opinion is strongly divided as to how much of this disorder could have been orchestrated, and how much was mere coincidence. However, it seems certain that the Alpha Legion was involved at some level. The Ekrilla Conclave. It has never been established if members of the Alpha Legion exhibit the same unnatural longevity as other Chaos Space Marines, who can apparently live for many thousands of years. This phenomenon is generally attributed to the Traitor Legion's existence in the Eye of Terror, where the laws of time and space do not apply. Thus, it would follow that the Alpha Legion should not be affected. However, if Alpha Legion Space Marines have more normal lifespans, then one must ask how losses are replaced. In his address to the Ekrilla Conclave, an impassioned Inquisitor Craven warned, "The only possible answer is that new Chaos Space Marines are being recruited and genetically modified somewhere within the Imperium. Yet Terra refuses to acknowledge there is even a serious threat. They are all around us. Just look over your shoulder. Perhaps when you are attacked in your own cities and murdered in your own homes, then you will see I am right." Shortly after the conclave, Inquisitor Gerux publicly accused Craven of consorting with traitors and conspiring to organize cultist uprisings on the worlds of Kartha 4, Kartha 5, and Arkos 2 in the Corrine subsector. Gerox challenged Craven to appear for trial and face the evidence against him. However, Craven's current whereabouts are unknown. Of course, this development has called into question the reliability of all Inquisitor Craven's research. And, as he was the leading scholar on the Alpha Legion's history and current activities, much of what was known about the traitors must now be considered a lie. If, as Gerox claims, Craven has been compromised by those very traitors he sought to investigate, then everything he has said must be considered misinformation and propaganda invented by the Alpha Legion. Homeworld. Alpharius never revealed the planet of his origin, and even the general area of his discovery is now lost to legend. His legion never took a single world as their base, and instead operated from various secret locations throughout the Imperium. Many of these bases have been uncovered and destroyed over the millennia following the heresy, although often these outposts were deserted by the time they were found. Combat Doctrine. Malfarius's doctrine was to attack the enemy in as many different ways as possible, all at the same time. How this axiom manifested in practice varied depending on the scale and location of the conflict. Tactics confirmed as having been employed by the Alpha Legion include flank attacks, tunneling to undermine or bypass defenses, teleportation or airdrops behind enemy lines, diversionary attacks, infiltration, disguising troops and vehicles in enemy colours, disabling enemy transportation, both vehicles and routes, sabotage of fuel and ammunition dumps, poisoning of water and food supplies, atmospheric and ecological tampering, triggering of volcanic, seismic and tectonic activity, bribery and coercion of enemy troops, including officers and Imperial officials, enlisting enemy forces, impersonation of Imperial officers, distribution of propaganda to incite unrest and rebellion, organization of civilian riots and other anti-imperial activity, sponsorship and supply of heretical cultist groups, an alliance with anti-imperial military forces, including other traitor legions and aliens. Generally, a number of these tactics will be employed in careful coordination, often resulting in labyrinthine secret plots. It has been noted that due to its use of complete unorthodox tactics, the Alpha Legion is able to deploy smaller forces than might otherwise be necessary. Combat is regarded as only one part of their overall strategy. Organization. Very little is known about the internal organization of the Alpha Legion. Alvarius placed a high value on secrecy, even before the Legion turned traitor, and captured legionaries have revealed little under interrogation. On occasion, there have been successful assassinations of members of the Legion, thought to be high-ranking officers, but their removal has had little visible effect on the Legion's operations. The Legion's symbol, the Hydra, is a multi-headed mythical beast that could keep fighting even if one of its heads was cut off. This legend reflects the Alpha Legion's command structure, as well as its doctrine of multiple attacks. It is known that the Legion recruits, supplies, and organizes hundreds of cultist cells on Imperial worlds. These groups are not all crazed devotees of the Chaos Gods and insane demon worshippers, although there are plenty of those. They are also highly organized, trained, and motivated groups who work to subvert the authorities, produce and spread propaganda, and when called upon, undertake military action, usually in the form of bombing, sabotage, and riots. Such actions will generally form part of a larger Alpha Legion plan, for example, to lure Imperial forces to a particular place by organizing a civil disturbance, or to prevent the arrival of reinforcements by blowing up a bridge. The question then arises, how does the Alpha Legion coordinate all its activities and communicate with these disparate cells? Inquisitor Craven is not the only one to have claimed that the Alpha Legion achieves its communication through the use of so-called operatives. These figures are apparently human, but may have undergone limited Space Marine psycho-hypnotic indoctrination to make them utterly loyal to the Legion, and possibly even the implantation of some of the Adeptus Astartes organs. According to the claim, these operatives are the link between the cultist cells, travel about with impunity where a Space Marine would quickly draw attention, set up new groups, guide their agendas, and bring them instructions. During protracted campaigns, operatives may pose as enemy soldiers and gather intelligence or sabotage the enemy army. The existence of these operatives has not been proved, but few other explanations have been put forward. While it is not officially acknowledged by the Adeptus of Terror, the Alpha Legion clearly remains a canker within the very heart of the Imperium. Beliefs. Alpharius believed in planning and coordination. He always sought alternatives and multiple solutions to any given problem, with different elements working together for the end result. These doctrines have been thoroughly embraced by the Legion as a whole, and have proved effective, especially in the disparate and secretive way it now operates. All Space Marine Legions set arduous tasks and trials for potential recruits, but prior to the heresy, the Alpha Legion set these initiation tests for squads, not individuals. Squads had to succeed as a group or not at all. Foolhardy heroics were frowned upon. The overall plan was paramount, and more valuable than any one Space Marine. It is not known whether this practice is still carried out. Gene Seed. While the Alpha Legion does not reside in the Eye of Terror, and therefore is not plagued by the warping effects of that maelstrom of insanity, there is still evidence of mutation in the Gene Seed. If such a problem existed prior to the heresy, it was kept concealed. Given the Legion's predilection for secrecy, that would not be surprising. During the Leith ambush, during the Gothic War, mutated Alpha Legion Space Marines hid their warped body parts, not out of shame, but so they could reveal them as they attacked, adding horror and revulsion to the shock of their sudden assault. Battle Cry. Imperialistic cries of "For the Emperor" and other similar cries are deliberately calculated to mock and infuriate foes who recognize them as traitors. Many of their victims who don't know the difference between an Imperial Space Marine and a Chaos Space Marine will simply think they have been betrayed. And there we go. The Alpha Legion, our secret bros, Our secret bros. Again, like I've said before, this is before a lot of the heresy stuff was worked out. And, you know, you've got to remember at the time, it was a massive reveal that Alpharius was twins. You know, like, none of us knew this. You know, it was a completely new thing. That novel by Dan Abnett, the one with the Chino 86 Chiliad. I forget, the Gino Chiliad. that one with the Alpha Legion in it. That was the first time we'd seen any of this sort of stuff, you know. So the Alpha Legion were really, they were really like a clean slate to do amazing things with. And they have done really good stuff with them. But like the stuff with the Heresy, with one of the brothers getting, you know, their alliance with the Conclave, the apparent schism between them, the brothers. Yeah, we don't know for certain what's happening. And that appears to have changed. What we know about, you know, Gilliman killing one of them. Or maybe it hasn't. Maybe that is going to happen, but it wasn't actually him. But you'd think he'd know. But then again, they were twins, and they didn't seem to know this. No one seemed to know they were twins. You get me? It's like a thing. I'm looking forward to the Primarch novel that's coming out on Alpharius. I'm hoping that'll be interesting. I'm hoping it'll be good. But there's amazing things in this. And also the whole thing with operatives and everything. If you've been reading the Fabius Boyle novels, which again, I will say, are the greatest set of 40k novels ever produced. They are amazing. A lot of the new men who Fabius had bred and grew, they went with the Alpha Legion. So, you know, the Alpha Legion would have kept that sort of that stock going, encouraged them to multiply and stuff, you know, and use them. So they're probably using them as, you know, operatives now. Or the descendants of them. It's interesting. It's really interesting. This is why Chaos stuff is so good. You get me? Because you got the overarching Imperium, and then you got the Chaos dudes doing their own thing. It's fascinating. But yeah, Alpha Legion, one of the more interesting factions, chapters, legions that we've got, and definitely want to see more of them. Again, I want to know more about Alpharius' previous life before being found. And, you know, hopefully this account of his early life, of his first meeting with Horus, is kind of about right. I remember reading that encounter, like a slightly different version of it, in the Heresy books. But it's been so long since I've read those early Heresy books, you know. I read them when they were first coming out, you know what I mean? It's like over 10 years ago, you know, for most of them. So, yeah, I'll have to go back and double check that sort of stuff. But I'll be doing more Heresy stuff in 2021. So, yeah, get ready for that. Anyway, thank you all for watching. Thank you, everybody, supporting the channel. You can see all your names here. It means the world, lads. I really appreciate it. Thank you for supporting me. And, I just, you know, it really, really helps. Thank you. If you'd like to support the channel, you can use the links below. But I'm not going to beg you. But, you know, if you could, that'd be grand. Anyway, I'm going to go. Thank you all for watching again. And I hope you've enjoyed these indexes. This is the last of the Legion, the Founding Legion indexes. I'll do a couple more on the second founding ones, but I'm not going to do everything. I also did like Space Marine sort of short videos. If you go to the Warhammer Lore playlist, you'll find a bunch of them for like lesser known sort of second, third founding chapters and stuff that I did like 2 years ago. They're okay, I think. I think my presentation is a lot better now, but there's loads of Space Marine content there if you're interested. So yeah, look them up. But I'll be doing a few more indexes. I'm not sure how many, but at least 3 or 4, maybe. We'll see. They'll be coming up soon. But definitely going to do Flesh Terrors. Definitely. All right, see you later. Bye-bye.